everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Ringside Rundown podcast brought to you by TWM.news. My name is Eric Vasquez, and joining me on the line is my podcasting partner in crime. Yes, that rhymes. She is Shay Hickson. Shay, what's going on, my friend?
Yeah, what is going on? It's been a little bit, it feels like.
Yeah, we had to take some time off to get our bearings back, and you got to go to see Dynamite and Rampage. How was that?
That was, it was pretty good. It was funny because literally leading up to it, my boss at my work and one of my other coworkers are super into wrestling too, especially AEW. So we were like talking about it for weeks leading up to it. And full transparency, we were not overly thrilled by the card that we got at first. Mm-hmm. Just seeing it on paper, it was like, this is it. This is all we got. Like, obviously, we were happy because, you know, Britt and all that. And then we got Adam Cole, too. But there were just some things where we're like, this has to lead to something else. But then when we actually got to the show, it was really good, I think. It's always a difference you can tell from, like, if you're there live versus on TV. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they have their pros and their cons, where if you go to a live, like a live taping, you get a better, like, behind the scenes kind of view, I guess, of certain things. And then, but you also miss some things you see on TV. So there was one thing in particular that kind of stood out to me. And I think we have to talk about it anyway with one of the questions, but I think a lot of people missed it, and it was one of those, you had to be there to see what was going on. But yeah, other than that, it was a really good show. I was almost slightly disappointed because I thought we weren't going to see House of Black, because when they were taping all the Dynamite stuff, they weren't showing up, and they didn't tape Darker Elevation before Dynamite. They actually taped some Ring of Honor stuff. So
nice.
Yeah, didn't get to see House of Black on that. So I'm kind of just like, well, this sucks. What the hell's going on? And then luckily they advertised that Julia was going to be wrestling on Rampage, quote unquote Saturday, as in later that night. So we got to see a House of Black entrance. So you know what? That was worth it for me. That was very cool to experience. So overall, it was a pretty good show.
Yeah, there was a lot of the show because I knew you were there. So I was watching with kind of like you in mind, wondering how the live audience was going to react to the show. There was some definite, as far as like a TV viewer, there were some definite hit and misses. One of the things I definitely want to talk about is Britt Baker coming in. Obviously, she got her match. She had a tag team match with Jamie Hayter. She got the loudest ovation, obviously.
Duh.
Yeah, you guys went crazy for her. And then she came out to confront Chris Jericho when he was about to attack Adam Cole, which ended up being a whole big ruse, almost. It almost like there's been an allegiance form between the Jericho Appreciation Society and the Outcast. The reason I bring this up is because I'm not the biggest Jericho fan. If you listen to the podcast regularly, you know this. But I thought that angle was really, really well done. I think the only thing that would have put it over the top is if Jericho would have took the kendo stick himself and got a couple whacks in on Britt Baker. I think that would have sent the crowd into a frenzy. But it was a great angle.
Yeah, we would have been very mad if that was the case. We honestly thought that might have been the case, but all of our listeners know we really aren't a fan of Jericho. So when I'm hoping this doesn't mean that the Outcasts are like with the Appreciation Society, because I'm like, leave them alone, please. I am begging you, do not put Saraya and Ruby and Tony near them at all. Clearly that didn't work, but it was surprising, especially the fact that that tag match was the first match of the night, because my boss had a theory about Britt that obviously we'll get to with the questions. So I was kind of wondering if they were going to put this as the main event, if that certain theory would have come true, and thank God it didn't. But I was very surprised having them open the show, but it was a pretty good match, I thought. What do you expect? We were nuts for Britt, because of course we are. The thing that I kind of talked about earlier was the fact that I don't think people realize that Jamie may possibly be hurt.
Oh.
Because the way where we were sitting, we were on the camera side, so you wouldn't have seen us on TV. And they were good seats, don't get me wrong, but we kind of were like in the path of the the camera on the mechanical arm that goes all over the place. So some things are kind of cut in half, but it's like, you know, you learn when you buy the tickets. But we were right. We were kind of like not dead center from the state or the ring. We were kind of like right off the ring towards the stage. So our view was pretty much the entirety of the stage, the ring. And then you can kind of see, because we were a little higher up with the way the Pete's set up, where you could see the little like small curtain area next to the stage where people would go in and out and whatever. And I'm sure when you watched it on TV, and we went back and watched it yesterday too, just to make sure it looked as weird as it did in person, where, so Jamie got thrown out of the ring towards the end of that match. I think it was Ruby that threw her out. And you could kind of tell she was limping a little bit, because I think she hit like her hip off the side of the ring, which that would hurt. I don't blame her in the slight for that. And then right at the end, remember when Tony threw her into the steps and then drop kicked her arm into the steps?
Yeah.
So I think that's where she might have hurt herself, because if you noticed, when Britt won that match, Paul Turner raised her hand. Jamie was nowhere to be found, and you saw him say something to her, and she kind of looked a little like concerned, and like she like ran out of the ring. Because what we saw was one of the doctors, the ringside doctors, walking Jamie. They were already walking her up the ramp as that match was ending, and she's kind of limping, and she's kind of holding her like upper arm or shoulder. So I think something might have went wrong with that drop kick on the end of the stairs. And like I said, it kind of like makes more sense now when you see the TV version and the live version. So like Britt was getting her hand raised and Jamie was already getting walked to the back, and she actually didn't end up going up the ramp. She went off that little like side curtain area, and Britt starts like kind of not speeding up the, like speed walking, kind of jogging up the ramp. And she goes to Jamie and she looked a little concerned, and Jamie did not look, it didn't look like it was acting when she was in pain. And I'm just like, son of a bitch, that's not good. And it made me kind of wonder if that was the reason why we didn't see Jamie try and come out later in the night with the whole Jericho and Adam Cole thing when Britt was getting beat up. I wouldn't be surprised, because if she couldn't have, well, because a lot of people on Twitter were wondering, well, where's Jamie? Where's Keith? First off, that makes some the good sense. Where the hell was Keith Lee in that? But Jamie couldn't come out to help because maybe she was legitimately hurt. But yeah, I'm hoping I was wrong, or I'm just hoping that if she was hurt, it just isn't as bad as it looked, because she didn't look 100%. Let's just put it that way. It did not look too terribly good.
Wow, the benefits of being there live and in person, you get the firsthand account of some pretty big news. Hopefully, like you said, hopefully it's not anything serious. Hopefully it's just a bump in the road and she's back, because AEW's got this big thing going on. They got All In at Wembley Stadium in August, the end of August, which is a pretty big, it dominated the headlines for a little bit. A lot of people were worried that like maybe they can't fill in the stadium, Wembley Stadium.
But yeah,
I think the goal, because I think they were like, well, you know, when WWE did it back in 1992, there were like 90,000 people. And let's be realistic here. I don't think AEW is shooting for those numbers.
No.
But I think if they get 40 to 50,000 people, that's a pretty big success.
Yeah, that would be a really big deal, especially for a stadium that size. Yeah, especially for not even a...
Sorry about that, guys. My dog goes nuts. Shut up. He goes nuts whenever he hears a car alarm go off. But we'll try to push through it.
He was mad about us talking about Wembley Stadium, apparently. So
yeah, he doesn't like it. He's not a big AEW dog. He's more of a WWE dog. But yeah,
that's a shame.
I just wanted to make note that I don't think wrestling fans, if they're being realistic, they're not, you know, guessing that AEW is going to put 90,000 butts in seats in Wembley Stadium.
No, but if you literally, as a company that's not even at this rate, barely 4 or 5 years old now at this rate, I think 4 years old, that's saying something. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it's pretty ambitious what they're doing. Again, and I think we got to applaud them for actually taking a leap of faith and trying to give the UK fans something, because that's another thing too that people don't realize is that people in the UK, they love not only wrestling, but media and pop culture in general is big in the UK. So this is big, and I think the UK fans are really going to show out for this.
Yeah, and I think they kind of took WWE's lead a little bit, where obviously Clash at the Castle was a really big deal, and then apparently they're having Money in the Bank in the UK too this year. So
yes,
there, I think they're just capitalizing off the fact that, like you said, UK fans love wrestling and they don't get it very often. So the fact that the mainstream wrestling's coming across the pond, I think that's a pretty big deal for them. So of course they're going to capitalize on it. And I think that, like I said, I think they're going to have a pretty decent sales with them. I hope, hopefully.
Yeah, I think they are. I think, like I said, this is big. I think, you know, obviously with the whole, and I know we have a question about this, the whole CM Punk situation, I think that's going to come into play. But I think that's going to sell a lot of tickets. And there's people that are outside of AEW that are clamoring for spots on the show. People like Kota Ibushi and, you know, people like that. And, you know, those are big names that they can bring in to make a lot of money. So, I think this is a pretty big deal for AEW. I'm excited. I can't wait for the show. I can't wait to see how it's going to shape up. What's the show before? We have Double or Nothing before
All In.
And that's going to be a pretty big show because they're moving a lot of stuff around. So AEW's kind of, I don't know, AEW's got my attention, you know, more so, not more so than WWE. I think finally, like, AEW's reached that part where they're kind of inching closer to WWE. I think WWE kind of shot the rocket off with WrestleMania and how successful WrestleMania was, but I feel like now that they're finally getting rid of all that issues from Brawl Out, you know, and they finally put their foot down and said CM Punk is definitely coming back, I think it still has people talking, which is never a bad thing.
No, you want the publicity, but sometimes the bad publicity is not always good, but we'll see what happens there. But I'm kind of wondering, I saw something earlier, I think it was on Cage Side Seats on their Rumor Roundup, that they supposedly AEW still wants to run All Out literally a week after All In, so I'm not sure if that's going to be a good idea, but, and it made sense because All In's, I think, the 27th, if I remember, of August, it's like the end of August, and they usually have the first week of September's All Out, so I'm like, is that really such a good idea? You can push it back a little bit, but even then, even just a few weeks is not going to be enough, I wouldn't think, unless you're just going to have literally All In 2.0 is All Out, which I don't think people would appreciate too much, but I don't know if that's gonna be such a hot idea, but
yeah, like you said, it is a rumor as of now. I did see that months ago, like I think somebody asked Bowens from the Acclaim, like, how that's going to happen with All Out in Chicago, like they usually do. And he had mentioned that they're thinking about doing it, like you said, like a week after or something like that, which is pretty ambitious. Ambitious, not going to lie.
Yeah, that's a little, I think, almost too ambitious. But hey, if you can make that work, all power to you. But I just don't see how you could do that with, honestly, if you think about it, even within a few days, because you'll have the Dynamite before All Out, and then you may have the Rampage before All Out, so you literally are going to have a feud or a storyline put together within days of the show. I'm not so sure that's going to be such a good idea.
Yeah, it's gonna be a tight squeeze. I don't know, logistically, like you said, we don't work there, so we're kind of lucked out, we don't have to worry about that stuff. Like I said, All In is definitely happening in August 27th, I believe it's going down, so that should be a good show. Can't wait for that. But now that we got that out of the way, might as well get back to our regularly scheduled format. For those that are new here that haven't listened to the show before, what we usually do here is we take your questions about anything that's going on in professional wrestling and we answer them. A lot of it has to do with news and rumors and things like that. Other people have some opinions and rants that they like to go on the show, and they like to get our opinions about that. So we have a lot of questions on hand, so might as well get right into it. What's the first question in the mailbag?
All right, so our first question is going to come from Mike. So thank you, as always, for your questions, Mike. These are the kind of questions I love. If we could push one woman one women's tag team, one male and one male tag team to challenge the champions at WrestleMania, assuming they keep the titles as of, you know, now, who would they be and why? And this could be an even a more layered question for us, considering there's a possibility we may be going to this WrestleMania this year. So
who, yeah, would in we our like, backyard.
Who would we like to see live wrestle for these titles? So, all right, let's start with the, all right, so let's start with the men. So who would be one male you would like to see? And I'm assuming it's just up for pretty much any title we would want. So who would we want to see challenge for a specific title and why with the men?
Man, I always had a, like, a, I wouldn't call it like a soft spot, but I always wish they did more with Finn Balor. I feel like he's a big player, you know? I think he would be good to, like, kind of build up and put in that main event scene. Another person I would love to see going up against Roman Reigns and WrestleMania would be Shinsuke Nakamura.
Ooh.
You know, I feel like Shinsuke is the one guy that they haven't touched, that they kind of teased that they were going to do like a Bloodline versus Shinsuke thing, and it never came to fruition. Now that he's back and he's in the fold, you know, I would love to see Shinsuke Nakamura, definitely. Shinsuke and Finn Balor, but I'm leaning more towards Shinsuke.
Those are some good ones. Surprisingly, we are not on the same wavelength, but I think this is just because of my personal bias. I would love if they were to build him back up properly. I'd love to see Karrion Kross go at Roman Reigns.
Yeah, that'd be
because they hinted at it with the whole Clash of the Castle, like, around that time. So if they were to reestablish him as a threat, which, I mean, he always can be. They just, I don't know what they've been doing with him. It just kind of makes me sad a little bit, but I would love to see Karrion, like, in his prime going against Roman, because the storyline possibility between those two would be off the charts, I would think. Yeah, I think I'll stick with Karrion for that one. I think that would be a fun one if they did it right.
Yeah, I think Karrion, I think, because, like, here's the rumor that's going around on the internet and the wrestling community, so take it with a grain of salt. This is just a rumor, you know, it's basically based off of what I've read. What I've read is the feeling going around is that the draft coming up is a chance for things to be reset, and now we're really going to get a taste of what Triple H can do with the main roster and being in full creative mode with the main roster. So they're saying that the draft is really going to be set up for the Triple H style of WWE programming that we're used to seeing. So the reason I say that is because that benefits people like Karrion Kross, you know, who was a big Triple H guy.
Dakota Kai
is another one. Io Sky, which I don't know if they're going to separate Damage Control, but there's a possibility with the draft coming up.
It might be
separated. Yeah.
Will it make me sad a little bit? But if that guarantees that Dakota might get more time to shine, then split them up. I would not care in the least. But and I think that's this Friday, isn't it? This coming Friday.
Yeah, it starts Friday with SmackDown, and then they're going to cross over to Raw.
We may have to do another Saturday episode then. See what all happens. We'll talk about that later. But all right. So we got the one male down. So who would we want tag team wise to challenge at this rate? Kevin and Sammy.
Tag team wise,
I'm gonna flat out say I want Judgment Day. I want Finn and Damian.
I'm liking Judgment Day too. We did see that there's kind of now an alliance between Judgment Day and the Bloodline, but that could be just a temporary thing. It doesn't necessarily have to be a full-blown thing, and again, we're booking a year in advance, so I think by then the momentum that the Judgment Day has built up is perfect. I wouldn't mind subbing out Finn and putting in Dominic Mysterio. I think Dominic Mysterio is doing phenomenal work. His run right now is just, anytime he grabs the microphone, he says anything. Oof. It's just instant
people
heat.
Pissed.
People just get really mad. And again, it's not the type that they're trying to cut him off with what chance. They're just vehemently
mad,
booing him, trying to get him out of the building. So he's doing a great job. I think giving him a chance to shine would be great. So I would actually sub out Finn Balor and put Dominic Mysterio in there. That'd be great.
That'd be a good one. You know, as long as Damian's in there, because I feel like I felt bad for Damian not getting, like, his chance at this year's WrestleMania, so I feel like he could do something really good if given the chance on WrestleMania next year.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so let's go to the women. So we'll go backwards on this one. Save the best for last. So a women's tag team, which I know are very few and far in between, but we got to at least try.
The thing about the women's tag team is that there's so many of them, but there, if you look at it, it's not a lot. It's so weird, you know. Like, you know, it's like if it's not Rhea or Bianca, they're in a tag team.
Literally.
to go up against Liv and Raquel, which I don't even know if Liv and Raquel would actually hold the titles for that long, the way the women's booking goes. But a women's tag team, I want to involve Natalya because I feel like she's solid in the ring, but she's already had a tag team reign, so I don't want to relegate her to being just a tag team wrestler. I think she might even be my choice to be the singles one. But you know, another name that's been popping up, I'm trying to think of tag teams. Jeez,
I feel like the only one I can think of is like Tony Deville and Chelsea Green.
Yeah, and I mean, they didn't capture the titles this past Friday, but I think maybe they have a legitimate gripe with the way the pin went down. So that's another thing to look out for. But man, see, that's the thing about the women's division. It's tough because they haven't been really booked that well, if we're being honest.
No, they haven't
been booked that well. So it's kind of hard to tell who can go up against Liv and Raquel that'll be on that level. I feel like maybe we would have to bring in some people from NXT, possibly.
Maybe, yeah.
You know?
Island, Alba.
Yeah, they'd be great because they seem like they're a tag team that's clicking. I like Isla and Alba because they're actually using some tag team continuity to show that they're a team. So that I think that's a solid choice. You know, and obviously, I know, you know, this is pretty much your bias, but Shayna and Ronda.
It's so tough because it's like I don't want to see Ronda with the title.
She needs something that she enjoys because it seems like anything else in WWE she's just not a fan of.
Yeah, but it's like, see, my thing is I want Shayna to have a singles title. I'm tired of her winning the like tag titles, like. We've seen enough of her with the tag team. She needs to be by herself.
Again, I think if this is true, what they're saying, that there's going to be a shift in the product creatively, like creative-wise, I think Shayna is a perfect Triple H girl to you know, carry that division. Because, again, she has that intimidating factor that works so well in NXT. I don't understand why they didn't do it on the main roster. When she was just going around scaring everybody, you know, putting the fear of God in them. I think that was great stuff. So, you know, she definitely, I know you don't want to see her go up for a tag team title, but I feel like they're the only solid tag team that's like a threat, like not only a threat, but they can run with the titles for a very long time. And I feel like that's one thing that they're doing is kind of not really playing hot potato, but like there's not been a substantial tag team reign since like Sasha and Naomi. And then they ended up dropping the titles anyway. They ended up giving up the titles. So, you know, it's like, it's almost like the tag team titles have been cursed.
Yeah, it feels like it, doesn't it? I'd still go with Isla and Alba. I think that would be a really fun team to, because from what I've been seeing in NXT, I feel like they have the power to create my, like, just mess with Liv and Raquel with, like, the mind games and, like, the witchy, spooky kind of stuff. So I could see them totally messing with the two of them and throwing them off their game. So that would be fun for me to watch, besides the fact that I like them both. But I would be interested to see how that would happen.
Yeah, I would too. I think those are solid choices.
And then the singular woman, and I feel like we can at least cheat a little bit since there's two champions. It's, you don't want to sound redundant, at least I don't, but it's just like, the two I would pick are the two most obvious ones for both. And starting with Bianca, you got a taste of it this week on Raw. I want it to be Dakota and Bianca because that match on Monday was good. That was really good.
And that's why I think they're going to thrive if they separate damage control.
Yeah.
I think Io and Dakota are definitely, they've toiled away in NXT, but if you look at their body of work since coming on the main roster, they're kind of built for the main roster.
Yeah, and that match with Bianca on Raw showed that Dakota can be a challenge to Bianca. She's quick and crafty and thinks on her feet, and she got out of a lot of moves that usually Bianca would put people away with. So I would love to see that happen and, you know, win it on WrestleMania. That just me being biased. And then, I mean, come on. The story would speak for itself with Rhea. Her and Shayna. Come on.
Yeah.
You literally can write it back from all the way back on long-term storytelling with NXT. Rhea was the one that beat Shayna for the title in NXT. So why can't she get the revenge on the main roster?
Yeah, I like that. I know you're not trying to sound biased, but it feels like they have untapped potential in Shayna, and they're kind of like misusing it.
Screaming about for months, for as long as the show's been on the air. Just like, hopefully there will come a day where my repeated rants are justified. But until then, I will keep talking it into existence that Shayna and Dakota are going to get their time to shine.
I think you'd probably celebrate as hard as Shayna would if she won a title.
I probably would too. Like, you'd probably hear me all the way from over here, but
I probably would, yeah.
Someday. Hopefully someday, and hopefully that's sooner rather. I mean, hell, hopefully it's would be at WrestleMania. That would be, I'd be the only one screaming probably, but oh well. So those would be mine too. It'd be Dakota and Shayna, easily.
Yeah, those are good ones. For my two, I'm going to go out of the box. I'm going to go For Rhea, I would love to see her go up against Candice LeRae.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
I think it'd be a perfect David versus Goliath. And for a lot of Candice LeRae's moveset, she needs someone that has like a strong physical base.
Mm-hmm.
So Rhea fits that profile perfectly. So I think that would work great. So Candice LeRae is my one choice. And for Bianca Belair,
it's tough.
She's ran through everybody.
Yeah.
She's ran through everybody and made it look convincing too.
Yeah. But that's the problem.
Yeah. I would love to see Bianca and Io Sky again, this time for the title.
Yeah.
I think Io Sky is just, she's on her way to getting a major women's world title. She's just that good. Like, she's one of those gems that you don't want to give up to like AEW or something like that, or you don't want her to go back to Japan and, you know, do that. So I think Io Sky would be my choice, because I just think she fits. Like, she can carry a division much like Bianca's been carrying the division. Her title reign has been very, very good. She's been carrying that Raw women's division. So I'm excited to see what the draft does to kind of mix things up and give her some new opponents.
Yeah, I completely agree. Those are some good choices, too. I like those ones. All right, so we got that all done. Is WWE right to play hardball with Drew McIntyre in the contract negotiations?
Ooh. I feel like he's kind of regressed a little bit.
A little bit, through no fault of his own, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's just, he deserves a lot of credit because he was carrying the WWE during the pandemic as a champion. So he deserves a lot of credit for doing so and kind of making it not relevant, but like making the product watchable. Because I felt like it was perfect timing to give him the belt. It's just, it's tough now. Because everybody that's in the WWE, they're all vying to be the number one guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, if you're not, then why are you there?
Right. So, like, in contract negotiations, how do you go, I want to be the number one guy, but I realize that the company is on a high right now because of the way the product has been booked, the way Roman Reigns has been booked. Yeah. It's something that you don't want to mess up.
No.
You know, and obviously they have more in the tank, because if they didn't, they would have gave the belt to Cody.
Yeah. So
there's more for the bloodline to do there that we haven't seen. You know, Roman Reigns after WrestleMania was like, this is just like the third inning. We're not even close to being done. So what the hell does that mean?
Jeez. Oh, he's going to be champ for another 5 years at this rate. That's how we're going. You know?
So cool. Like in contract negotiations, how do you go, I want to be that guy.
Yeah. And
how does WWE go, can he be that guy? Can he be the guy that we give the belt to and can run with it for 500, 600 plus days? I don't know.
It's tough because like he can counter with what you said, where in the toughest time in the companies and just like in the world's history, he was carrying that company. So it's not like he's some mid-card guy going, oh yeah, no, I can be like Roman Reigns, the next Roman Reigns. It's like, I think if anyone could do it, Drew could potentially. We don't, I mean, obviously we don't know, but you also have to think about his undisclosed injury apparently he has, which is why he's not here. So it's like, what's going on there?
Wow, there's a lot going on there. Yeah. I know he had to miss a couple shows due to illness and things like that. So it's tough. But I mean, in contract negotiations, again, I always look at it as this person is vying. If they're not vying to be the number one guy, then why are they there? You
exactly.
know, nobody goes, I want to be a supporting player. Like if you go to Dolph Ziggler, who's been a mid-card guy toiling away on main event, you know, and you go, do you want to be world champion? I would be surprised if he said no.
Yeah, literally. Like,
you know, and not only that, but do you believe that you can be a world champion? Do you believe that you can carry this company, you know, and make it prosperous and maybe even elevate the product to even newer heights, you know?
Yeah.
That's tough. That's tough. And I feel bad. I feel bad for Drew McIntyre because, like you said, and none of it is like any of his regression has been fault of his own. He's just been a guy that's been doing his job, you know? He's been doing pretty good.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that could be another thing he said. He's like, well, he could be like, look, I've been a team player for God knows how long. And I think that should mean something, you would think.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So that's, It's a pretty interesting picture. Now, do I think he has leverage if he was to go to AEW, let's just say? Like, if he was using that as leverage, like, I could just go to AEW. I don't know if he would probably get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, I feel like we'd say that with everybody, honestly, because there's so many people.
There's so many bodies there in AEW. It's crazy how anybody gets TV time, you know, and now they're going to have another show coming.
2 hours apparently. I'm like, guys, we don't have enough hours in the day to watch this stuff, especially on the weekends. Like, what are we gonna do?
Yeah, this is gonna be interesting times.
This is gonna hurt. Hopefully in a good way, but still, it's just like, oh my god, guys. We even talked this into existence because we're like, thank god there isn't another show, because this is about as good as we can get with like being able to be on top of everything. And AEW is like, no, wait, hold on, guys. Like, hold on. It's like, please, please don't. But we're getting it whether we like it or not, apparently. So that's going to be something, I guess. Alrighty. Did FTR make a mistake signing with AEW? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I think they were smart in the sense that they knew the money was there.
Yeah.
They like what we're saying, this goes back to contract negotiations. You look at them and they can rightfully say they're one of the best, if not the best tag team on the planet. So they can definitely carry a division. So it was smart on them not only to re-sign, but it was smart on AEW to reward that re-signing with giving them the tag team titles. In WWE, they probably would have had some great matches with like the Usos. Yeah. New Day, whenever they come back together, they would have had great matches, but I don't know if it would have been the same sort of organic reaction that they get in AEW.
I don't think so. I think their contract negotiations were probably the complete opposite of Drew's, where they didn't probably have to do a whole lot of negotiating. They probably were like, just look at our resume, and I don't think we really have to say much else.
Right, because they could easily have went, you know, if you don't sign us, we go back to WWE. Because it's not like WWE wouldn't re-sign them.
Oh yeah, no, not especially not now.
Yeah, especially not now. You know, of course they would have re-signed him, so they could have easily just went back to WWE. The one thing that I do find that's very interesting is that it's a 4-year contract, and they say after those 4 years, they're done.
Which might make sense, because I feel like, oh, they'd be in their late 30s at that point, so I don't know. I mean, they could just say that, but I also feel like there would be people that would hold them to that, probably. And if they didn't, they would get called on it out on it rather quickly. But I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a, it's also 4 years from now. A lot can change in 4 years.
It's just so interesting, because you see people that love wrestling as much as FTR does. You know, they can't let wrestling go. They're kind of like the Ric Flairs of the world that kind of hang on and, and, you know, overstay their welcome, let's just say. But I guess they want to avoid that. But that's got to be tough. To 4 years, you think about 4 years, is not a lot of time in the wrestling world.
It's a weird thing about time, where it's a lot of time, but it also isn't at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Where you blank and then all of a sudden it's been 4 years and you're like, holy hell, that went by real quick. So,
right.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, I would like to think they wouldn't do that as like a ploy. I feel like if they would say it, they'd actually mean it. They seem like they're pretty genuine guys. So, if that did, we better enjoy it while we can, because 4 years is 4 years.
Yeah, definitely.
It's crazy. It's just all I can say. It's crazy. oh boy, did Bron Breakker dropping the title have to do with his dad and that fun little shit show he had at a WrestleCon?
I'm going to go with no.
I hope not.
I hope not, but I think Bron losing the title, I think it was just written in the stars. I think it was Carmelo's time to take over the brand and kind of lead the brand. And I felt like Bron Breakker did everything he could in NXT and did it very well. And I think he's ready for the main roster to kind of have a main roster run. Hopefully, because like I look at Bron Breakker and I think main roster, and then I have like flashes of Ryback. I don't know why that happens, but I hope he's a little bit more athletic. He's a little
bit more
charisma. Yeah, he has a little bit more charisma, so hopefully that doesn't go that route. I think he could make a big splash on the main roster, but I think him dropping the title was just it was proper, you know, not to do anything with what his horrible, deplorable, disgusting father had to say at a WrestleCon, which is just abhorrent behavior for someone of his stature, of his age.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have anything nice to say, just shut up and keep it to yourself.
Honestly, like, I don't want to go too off on a tangent about this, because clearly this kind of pissed me off a little bit. Just fuck Rick Steiner. Just fuck him, dude. Like, it's bullshit.
It's crazy. Like this like old generation just doesn't understand the concept of shutting up, you know, because no matter how hard we try, you know, it's going to be tough to get that old generation style of thinking to dissipate and try to show them, you know, the way they're thinking is wrong. So why not just tell them, you know, keep your dumbass opinions to yourself.
Literally, it is, you know what, it is literally not that difficult, because guess what, whether people want to admit it or not, trans rights are human rights too. They are literally just the same as you and I. They deserve to just be themselves, and if somebody doesn't like that, then they can fuck off. Like, it's ridiculous.
I can't say it any better myself.
It was bullshit what he said. It's making me mad all over again, so we're just gonna move on. So Mike, thank you for your questions. We appreciate them as always.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, so let's go to Mom's first set of her questions, because she asked us some new ones yesterday. So Mom, thank you for your last week's questions. What are our thoughts on Trish's promo? Because she personally thought it was a little odd.
Really? I've never been a Trish Stratus fan. I never was a big Trish Stratus fan, but I thought the heel promo coming out and just being, you know, I'm the one that paved the way. I mean, she has a legitimate gripe.
Yeah.
When she says that, you know, she just did say it because it's not a nice thing to say. It puts you in a bad light, you know, but I feel like the promo itself was strong. You know, she didn't get rattled by the crowd.
Yeah. God. The what chants need to die. I think we just need to say that right now. It's just dumb.
I don't know. I don't think it's ever going to die. I think the best thing you can do is just figure out a cadence when you're cutting a promo to kind of combat it. I think if you don't give them a chance to say what, you know, in a way that you can deliver a promo, then that's a positive thing. But I felt like her promo was strong. I felt it at least got me interested. Like I'm a little bit more interested in heel Trish Stratus.
Yeah.
Than anything that she's done prior. It's just a shame that we kind of have to wait till probably SummerSlam.
Yeah, but maybe the build will be worth it.
Yeah, it can have a slow build. I like slow builds.
Yeah, we like long-term storytelling.
Yeah, so I'm not worried about that. I feel like they could do some things in between. Like have Trish show up on a Raw or something like that. You know, in between to kind of keep building it up and letting people know that it's still there. I just think it was a strong, solid promo, and I felt like being that she's a bad guy character now. It's a little bit more freeing, and she can show a little bit of more charisma and character. So I thought it was solid.
Yeah, I think so too. And again, I'm glad that she was able to get around the what chance, and it just, I think that could have been the one time the WWE could have put in the fake boos, and it would have been a little better than just letting the what chance try to drown her out. But yeah, I wish the what chance would go away. And small side tangent, because I had to experience this on the Rampage taping. I'm sure we can spoil this because people are going to see this after Rampage anyway. So Julia Hart's match with Kiera Hogan, someone on the opposite side of the arena had a beach ball. And they were, hitting it around, and everyone was loving it until it landed in a security guard's hands, and he took it away, and people were booing. I'm like, no, fuck the beach ball. Like, I hate when people do that shit, because it doesn't matter if it's a women's match or a men's match. I'd be a little insulted where you're not even paying attention to my match because you're too busy hitting a beach ball around the arena. Like, I think it's disrespectful, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's interesting because you look at these things and like our feelings toward it, it's common sense. Like the beach ball is a dumb thing, it's a dumb thing to do, but it's like, where do these people come from?
And they literally, somebody was trying to, I don't think they really started the chant too well. Someone tried to chant or bring back the beach ball or something, or we want the beach ball. And I'm like, no, we don't. We don't, but apparently we were in the minority on that one. But yeah, there's a little pro tip for you guys. If you listened to Dynamite or watched Rampage and you heard that those boos randomly in the match with Julia and Kiera, it's because the security card took the beach ball away. It had nothing to do with the match. And it's just like, I hate it. It's just disrespectful. And again, it wouldn't have mattered if it was like a men's match or a women's match. I hate it. It's stupid. It needs to go away, as do the what chance. But for some reason, people just find that hilarious. If it would have went over to me, I would have popped it. I fully would have just like stepped on it and popped it. But yeah, maybe someday. But no, it was just stupid. But yeah, no, Trish's promo was really good, despite the crowd being dumb. She made some very good points, and I am interested to see where this is going to go, because I feel like this could be a really good match. All right, so this one kind of was the theory I was hinting at a little bit earlier. So the week before this Dynamite, when Britt came out to have the 5,000th, brawl between them and the Outcast, she was wearing green pants, if you would notice.
Right.
So, of course, people were losing their minds, and my boss is like, oh, do you think they're going to turn her in Britsburg? I'm like, they better not. They absolutely better not, because I don't know how that crowd would have reacted. I really don't. I could have seen them cheering because it's Britt, because Britt does anything and we cheer, but I also would be like, why would you do this now? Thankfully she didn't. So I don't see, the second part of the question is, do we see a heel turn in her future and align with the Outcast? Heel turn, maybe going with the Outcast. No, I think it wouldn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah. I see a heel turn. eventually you're going to have that Jamie Hayter versus Britt Baker match, you know? Because again, like we said earlier, in this business, if you're not trying to be the number one, you know, then what's the point? And not for nothing, Britt's kind of been playing second fiddle to Jamie Hayter, you know? So, and you know, that doesn't sit, that shouldn't sit well with Britt Baker. That doesn't
Someone like Britt,
like,
no.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the Britt that we're used to getting. I think they're just biding time, letting it simmer, but eventually she's going to come to her senses and realize, hey, I want to be a world champion. I was the world champion. I want that world championship back. And she's going to have to, because I don't see anybody taking it off of Jamie Hayter.
No, not anytime soon. So it's going to happen and it's going to break my heart, but it's going to lead to a very good match, probably. But yes, until as of this recording, we are not seeing that yet.
Yeah, I think they should just keep the Outcasts the way they are.
Yeah,
they're kind of growing on me because they're kind of annoying. You know?
Yeah, it was tough because I don't know if you saw it on Twitter where Britt had the poll of who do we hate the most, and it was Ruby Soraya and Tony. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, I can't vote on this because I can't. Like I love Soraya, I love Ruby, so I'm like, I can't. I refuse. I'm sorry. I'm like, I couldn't vote on it. I'm sure Soraya was like the number one choice anyway, but it was nice getting to see them all in person, so that was fun. I couldn't see her joining them. It wouldn't make sense.
Soraya just not caring, going after Britt Baker's mom.
Oh yes, Mama Baker. She was getting ready to throw hands. I was waiting to see it, but you don't want to mess with her. That's
crazy.
She's scrappy, so I wouldn't mess with Britt's mom at all. I just would think like the only reasoning maybe they could have would be Britt being like, "Well, I started to feel like an outcast being in Jamie's shadow," but I think that would just be a little bit of a dumb explanation, I think, if she would join. So I just don't think it would make sense because she's not an outsider. She's not an outcast. She's a homegrown. She's literally what the outcasts hate. So her joining would make absolutely no sense. At least I wouldn't think.
Yeah.
Or if they did, it would take a lot of convincing more for me to think that she would belong with them. So hopefully we don't have to deal with that. But all right, where's Pac been?
I believe it's been visa issues that has been keeping him away, or it's just naturally. I believe from what I read before, is he comes to the States and kind of wrestles in blocks.
Yeah,
you know, makes sense. he'll wrestle a set amount of matches before he goes back. But From what I understand, a lot of these people coming from overseas have been having visa troubles.
Yeah, no, Buddy Matthews had visa issues, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, Buddy had visa issues. Jamie. Bandito, I think the overseas has been an issue in terms of visas and things like that. But I was thinking the same thing, too, early before that question even came, before I saw it in the mentions. I was like, "Where? I wonder where Pac's been, because we haven't been seeing Death Triangle or anything like that."
Nope.
He's another one that'd be great to get into that All In Wembley show.
Yeah, I mean, that would make the most sense, you would think.
You know,
you wouldn't have to worry about the visa there, so.
Yeah.
He'd be available, I would hope.
Yeah, for sure. So hopefully they can get that squared away and bring him back into the fold. He's another guy that, like, I feel like they should make a bigger star out of.
Yeah, I agree. He's definitely got the talent for it, so I don't see why not.
Yeah.
Maybe soon. Who knows? We'll have to see if we talk it into existence for All In. All right, this one's rather easy. Do we see the Bloodline and Judgment Day coexisting for long? Absolutely not.
Nah, not in this business.
Not with those egos. You can't do that.
Yeah, I think there's too much ego involved. And more so, I think Roman is just kind of playing chess and kind of using the Judgment Day as pawns.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
You know? But there's a clip. I don't know if you've seen it. There's a clip of when Paul Heyman was in the ring with the Judgment Day and the Bloodline. And he shakes Damian Priest's hands.
Yeah.
And then you, if you look at Finn Balor's face, Finn is just absolutely disgusted.
He was not happy. He was mad.
He was just disgusted at the fact that Priest would shake hands with Paul Heyman. So maybe there's something there, you know, where like he's trying to recruit Damian Priest because he sees him as like the standout, you know. But as far as like, I think this is just an alliance of convenience, basically. But it's pretty cool that they involved the LWO too. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'm glad they actually remembered Zelina Vega exists.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how did you not have her on TV for how many weeks? Like, what the hell's up with that?
Yeah, and now they're giving her a match at Backlash, which I'm excited for.
Yeah, and that should be a really good one, too. I think it was funny. I think if you saw Rhea's tweet about it, she said, Mommy versus Little Pretzel. I'm like, you're probably going to fold her like a pretzel, but it'll be fun to watch.
Rhea's so good at social media.
She really is. And I don't think people realize how good this match could be because Zelina's no slouch in the ring. She can go.
No, she's got a lot of years under her belt.
Yeah. So put her in a ring with somebody like Rhea and see what happens because it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So we're going to stay with Mom's questions except from this week. So we're going to start with her last question from yesterday. Do we think Solo could join the Judgment Day?
Nah, I think Solo's bloodline only. But I do see him maybe breaking away from the bloodline
at some point. Yeah,
because he's been getting a lot of wins under his belt and a lot of big wins too. And
people aren't liking it apparently.
But it works.
Yeah,
it works. They're building him up to be an unstoppable monster.
Yeah, literally. And I mean, I don't think it's overexposing him. It's not like it's not like it's one of those where it's like, oh, you're just pushing him for the sake of pushing him and he clearly is not ready for this. No, he's ready for it because he's rising to the occasion. You can't say that he's not prepared for it.
He's definitely been a surprise about how ready he's been to be on the main roster, how well he fits. Yeah. He's definitely, so far, my 2023, I would say, Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I'd say so. And that's tough when you have like Dominic Mysterio there too. So, I mean, he's not technically a rookie, I guess, but... Yeah. We'll go with Solo. I'd say that's probably your easiest bet for that one would be Solo for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say keep him in the bloodline or go by himself. I don't think he'll be joining.
It just fits. I mean, the bloodline thing is all about blood. You know, they're all family. You know, so I feel like that caveat is what makes them special. Like, if you're not blood, look at what they did to Sami Zayn, who's not blood.
Yeah.
You know, they had somebody in there that's not blood, you know, and look what they did to him. So I feel like that one caveat is what makes the bloodline special is that they're all family. They grew up together, brothers, cousins, you know, and it just works.
Yeah, I completely agree. So blood only. That's the moral of the story. Blood only. What are our thoughts on the beatdown on poor Britt from the Outcast? It was brutal to see live, trust me. And yeah, it was very uncomfortable to watch. That was for sure.
I thought it was fantastic.
Adam did some very good acting. Very Academy Award level acting there. I liked it.
Yeah. When he's reaching out for her and she's calling him by his real name.
Yeah, yeah, you caught that too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh. I caught that. And she's calling him by his real name and she's reaching out. And he's reaching out trying to grab her and he can't because he's handcuffed to that room. It was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I was just like, I couldn't take my eyes off of it.
We were upset. Britsburg was not happy.
Did you think that the Outcast was going to show up from underneath the ring? Did you think that was a possibility?
No, I thought Jericho was going to do something to her. So they just showed up and we're like, how did they get under the ring? And we didn't notice. But I guess our theory was that I think when one of the video packages was playing, they probably snuck them under there because no one was paying attention, or at least I wasn't. So how they got under there is a mystery to me. But I didn't want them to be with the Jericho Appreciation Society, but I guess we don't always get what we want. So, but yes, no, it's a very good segment. A little confusing though, because people, like I said before, where's Keith Lee, especially after he helped him out last, Dynamite, Rampage, Dynamite. Yeah. Last Dynamite. So you could have helped Adam a little bit, but that didn't happen. And then people wonder where Jamie was, and I kind of already told you why I think she wasn't there. So, yeah, it's going to be a little interesting. And Adam, if you saw on his Twitter, is pissed, to say the least.
He's not a happy camper, and not that he should be, but he's out for blood. So,
Jericho is going to get destroyed, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. Could you imagine the way it would work out if Jericho ends up picking up the win?
Oh God, don't speak that evil into existence. We don't need that again. Like,
I don't want it.
I don't want it either.
I just think it's something that's a possibility with Jericho.
The worst part is that unfortunately I can see it where Adam's so blinded by his rage that he makes a mistake, but that's just, I'm assuming, if they do a long-term feud with him, not a one and done kind of thing. So we'll see, but yes, it was a very good segment, very uncomfortable, which means it did its job. So good job with everybody. It was good.
Yes.
So my mom loves Jay White now, and she was very excited to see him on Dynamite. She says he's a very talented guy, so who do we see as a great opponent for him in WWE? Should have been WWE, AEW.
Huh. I think the one thing that they kind of goofed on is including Juice Robinson in all this, but I think Ricky Starks is a perfect counterpart to Jay White to kind of bring him in. His first feud. The only thing is this Juice Robinson. I'm not a fan of Juice Robinson per se. He doesn't really do anything for me. And the whole Bullet Club thing. I mean, everybody's in Bullet Club. I think I'm in Bullet Club at this point.
I think we might be. Yeah.
So it's like doing the whole Bullet Club BC Gold or whatever you want to call it. It screams of NWO Wolfpack, like too hard. And it's overconvoluted. I think that's the only downfall to Jay White. I think they I don't know if they did enough to make him seem like a big star. Like coming out
at least not yet.
Not yet. Not yet. It's still like there's still time, you know, to see where this goes. But
I mean the crowd still went crazy for him.
Yeah, and you would know you were there, so you could definitely be the judge of that. You know, he's an incredible talent. He's a great wrestler.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I don't know where this is gonna go. If they're going to be able to build him up to be a single star, I think he's better suited to go up against Ricky Starks than Juice Robinson.
So you're saying you're not getting the Rock Hard Juice Robinson shirt?
No, I definitely wouldn't be seen in public with a shirt that says.
Yeah, my one coworker and I were kind of talking about that, where some wrestling shirts are great. Don't get me wrong. I have a lot of shirts that I can easily just wear out in public and not care. Like a lot of Brit shirts. I mean, are they horrifying to some people? Yes, because of the blood and everything. But some of these shirts, man, especially AEW, they have a very bad habit of, oh, this is like funny and people thought it was funny, so we're just going to put it on a shirt. Like, oh, God. And I apologize because I feel like this is partly my fault. Anna Jay's shirt. I've hated when she said it in the promo because I think it's just stupid. But then my coworker and I were like, God, I really hope that doesn't make it onto like a t-shirt or something. Or he's like, you know, they're going to put it on a t-shirt. I'm like, I really hope they don't. And then, yeah, so sorry. That's our bad. But who is going to wear that shirt in public and not? It's just, I can't.
Who wears a shirt that says scissor me, daddy?
Honestly, like, this is why I'm very selective about my kind of shirt. Like, here's our thing. We don't have to worry about this kind of stuff when we wear a House of Black shirts.
No, it's very aesthetic, you know. It's very dark and aesthetic to our pleasing.
We just have to worry about people giving us horrified looks and, like, praying for us, maybe. But, like, other than that, it's not, like, it's a public embarrassment kind of shirt to wear. Yeah, that's my criteria of a t-shirt where it's, like, do I like this wrestler? Yes. Can I actually wear this outside in public? No. So, yeah, I get very selective when it comes to the t-shirts because they're somewhere. I'm like, I can't wear this out in public and not get, like, laughed at for it. So, hey, if you buy that shirt, sure, you do you. Like, I just would never wear something like that. That's just kind of silly.
What a shirt.
You should have known it was going to happen. Because again, AEW just makes like the dumbest shirts. And I don't know why. there's just some shirts they have on that site where I'm like, do people actually buy this? And the worst part is, yes, probably some people do. So maybe be another question. What are some of our best and worst like wrestling shirts we own? Somebody remember that. Someone ask us that next week. We'll answer that question. Best and worst t-shirts we own.
There you go.
Until then, though, let's continue. Who do we think AEW signs next?
Who's a free agent?
I know it's tough.
Who's coming up?
Who is?
Everybody wants Mercedes Moné to come in and do some things. I think she's doing great in Japan and she's really enjoying herself in Japan. So like, keep making that money in Japan.
Yeah, I don't think she's going anywhere.
Yeah, I think she's really loving it. I don't know many contracts that are up besides like Drew McIntyre. I know Becky Lynch's is up next year. But these are people that I see as like WWE loyalists.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see them going anywhere else. And not that I don't think that they can be booked better anywhere else than what they're being booked at now, you know, except for maybe Drew McIntyre. But again, the problem with AEW is like there's just so many people that they're having to add this extra programming that I'm sure is going to take off really well in the beginning, but it might end up being like another Rampage where you maybe can watch this Rampage if you have nothing to do.
Yeah.
You know, or you can skip it if something else is going on, like the playoffs or something like that. You know?
Yeah, like, not like I need to watch the hockey playoffs right now, because
So it's just tough because, it's almost like everybody, once somebody's contract is up, it's like, oh, here they go. Here's a bidding war for this body, you know?
Yeah, and it's like, I think you're giving some people a little too much credit, but.
Right.
Yeah, who is a free, I don't even know. I feel like the only one I can think of is Kota Ibushi, but I think he's going to AEW at this point.
Yeah, I think Kota
Ibushi. But yeah, he would be going to AEW, so yeah, Kota Ibushi. What am I talking about? Yeah, it would have to be him.
That'd be a big time get for AEW. Not only for their programming, but the vast knowledge that he brings about pro wrestling. You know? His
relationship with Kenny, like, I think it kind of speaks for itself at that point. Like, where else would he go?
Yeah. Yeah, and not to say that WWE wouldn't know how to book Kota Ibushi, because he was in the Cruiserweight Classic and he did have those banger matches in the Cruiserweight Classic. So I'm sure Triple H is probably looking at the guy like, oh, I think they wanted him after the Cruiserweight Classic, but he wasn't willing to commit to coming to the States and living in the States, and that's why he just wanted to do the one-off thing. But I'm sure that they wanted him really badly, but I feel like I'm on the same wavelength as you. I think Kota Ibushi's probably the next big get for AEW.
Yeah, that's like literally the only one I can think of at this rate, which that would be a pretty big pickup, I would think. So we'll see if it happens.
Yeah.
Alrighty, so now we go to, I think that was all of Mom's questions. So Mom, thank you again.
Thank you, Mom.
Alright, so we go to Jack's questions next. This one could be a little bit of a controversial question, apparently, considering some of the reaction we've seen on Twitter from questions like this. Are we tired of the CM Punk drama like Jack is? Honestly, he doesn't want him back because he thinks he is a dark cloud looming over everything and you don't know what's going to set him off next. I know we've talked about this before and I know we're kind of on two different sides on this one. I think I lean more towards Jack's, where it's like, yeah, he could be good for so long, but if some innocent remark during a promo or something sets him off, he could have a whole brawl out 2.0. So it's almost like, is he really even worth it at this point?
Yeah.
And I don't think so.
See, I'm looking at it from like a money standpoint. And obviously they got Wembley coming up. They got the new show that's coming, the new two-hour show that's going to be coming on Saturday. Now they're talking. Here's the part that I don't like. there's potential that they want to do a brand split similar to what WWE does to kind of placate CM Punk and surround him with guys that would want to work with CM Punk.
Which isn't many, that's the problem.
Yeah, there's not many. And not only that, he's getting up there in age.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Here's my thing. If you literally have to bend over backwards for one person to make sure that your entire promotion doesn't go up in flames like it almost did, is the money really worth it at that point?
Yeah,
like, you shouldn't have to make a separate show for one person just because 99% of the company doesn't want to work with him.
Yeah, it's tough because that man could still see, he could still sell some tickets, which is the craziest thing.
He can, but are the fans over it now though too? That's
one thing. I think it's the. I don't want to even say the casual fan because I don't even think the casual fan watches AEW.
Probably not.
It's very divided. I see both sides. Both sides make great points. One side says sign him, keep him there because he's going to make you some money, which yes, he's going to make money. He's going to move merchandise. CM Punk merchandise moves like crazy. We can't deny that fact.
No.
But like you said, one small misstep and he goes off on a little tantrum. And that's it.
Yeah. You know, and you're right back to where you were before. And that almost destroyed that company.
Yeah. And so Tony's got to put his foot down and say, look, we can't have this. You're not going to have 100% creative control. We're going to do what's best for the company. And you're going to have to work with these guys.
Yeah.
If you want to work here.
But then the problem is then Tony's going to have to juggle with the other talent where it's like, look, you're going to have to like deal with him because he's here, whether you like it or not. And that's just the problem.
This doesn't happen in normal workplaces.
No, it doesn't happen in mine. We all just get along. If we don't like somebody, great. You just do your job and move on. And WWE and AEW, that's a little different. You kind of can't do that.
It's so weird. I mean, me... It's because both sides of the argument make such compelling points.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just, you can't gauge the internet because I think the internet is just so, especially Twitter, like.
Yeah.
You can't really voice an opinion or anything like that because you're just going to get run through the mud by some jerk off. You know?
we've seen that. Yeah, it's you like get a life.
You know, that's the thing. It's just like the way I look at it is he's gonna get a big reaction. He's gonna get a big reaction. If he doesn't move the ratings, then something might be wrong there. But then by then you're already in too deep. You know,
yeah, exactly.
You already have him signed. You know. Yeah. So it's just
a very divisive thing with fans and him. I've noticed. As we've unfortunately seen recently, you can't even mention anything negative about him with some people because then they just lose their shit for some reason or another. Not sure what that's about. It's like, if that's what you're literally looking for on Twitter, you need to get a life. But if you have those AEW versus WWE fans, AEW fans don't have that advantage anymore. They're like, oh, we'll see. Punk was so much better now than he was in WWE. Well, now WWE fans can turn right around and see he did the exact same shit here too. So what did he learn really? So.
Yeah, I think from a coworker standpoint, I wouldn't try to go and befriend the guy and be like another Dax or Cash.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Because we see what when an alliance with CM Punk does, you can't even have a podcast now. If you're friends with CM Punk, you know, so it's just like,
it kind of put them in a bad position too, especially Dax, when to like call them out publicly like that, well, no, he needs to come back. It's like, well, now that makes AEW kind of look bad, because then if you don't bring him back, the Punk, like, I don't know, apologists, I guess would that be the word? Like, I don't know how you describe them. They'd be like, well, see, you didn't listen to your company, your people, you, that's how terrible of a company you are. And it's just like, okay, but you can't listen to one person over the opinion of, oh, I don't know, hundreds probably in that company, and a lot of them don't want to work with him. So it's insane that one guy is causing so much discourse, not even just in AEW, but on the internet wrestling community in a nutshell. So it, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I, like I said, I see both sides of the coin. They make perfectly good points, you know? I can't articulate it. It's just so much. It's so much because it's like you said, be real. If this was any other person, they're probably not worth it.
No,
they're not worth it. But what makes this guy worth it? I don't get it. I don't get it. There's something that says he can move some money, but it's like logically, like, what is it about him?
Yeah.
You know, and he's getting up there in age. He can't move the same way he does. You see what he tried to do, like three buckshot lariats and failed miserably.
Yeah, that is not good.
You know, he's a little slow in the step, you know, and this is coming from an outsider who doesn't know shit about actually professional wrestling. But like,
yeah,
from a viewer standpoint, it's not the same Punk.
No. So talking, talking it still is, but in ring, no. Maybe that's why. Maybe it's the talking Punk that is what people like the most.
I think that's what gravitated me towards being a Punk fan in the beginning, was that he was talking as if he was the counterculture of professional wrestling.
Yeah.
And at that time, when he made his popularity back in 2011 with WWE, I think There were so many people that were clamoring for somebody to be so real.
Yeah.
That when he cut that pipe bomb promo that everybody loves to hate now for some reason. Yeah. It was just, at the time, it was like a breath of fresh air. Like,
yeah,
somebody's saying the things that we want to say as fans that are not getting through. And then 2011 happened, Money in the Bank, and we all got what we wanted, and then it fizzled out from there. And that's the talking side of CM Punk. The wrestling side, I don't know. I just think that they're going to do it anyway because they're going to, they want to move as many tickets as they can for Wembley. They got the new show, so they want to get the ratings, you know.
It's going to bite him in the ass at some, if not now, later on. It's like, how long did it take this whole, yeah, exactly. So it's like, do you actually trust him to keep his mouth shut? I don't know.
How worried does Tony Khan must be?
I like, don't envy him in the slightest.
Because Tony Khan's a lot like us. You know, he's a mark. You know, he's a fan. So, like, he can't go to CM Punk and objectively be like, hey, this is the way things got to go from here on out. If you don't like it, you can't be here.
Yeah.
I don't see Tony Khan being that type of guy.
Except he'd have to be. That's the problem. Like, you can't just be like, oh, yeah, hey, no worries, buddy. We can just, you know, let bygones be bygones. It's like, no, you actually have to tell him, hey, maybe don't be a jerk.
You know, yeah. Like, maybe you don't have to like the people that you work with. Just work with them.
Exactly. Like, that's literally every other job in, like, the world. That's how it works. You're going to work with people you don't like. You just deal with it. Because at the end of the day, whatever they do does not directly affect you or your paycheck until it does. And then, you know, that's a different story. But,
It's this guy is... He's so divisive and so...
Again, just go on Twitter and you'll see. It's... it's not good. It's just like, all for one guy. Like, really? So, yeah. Long story short, no. I wouldn't bring him back, and I'm sorry because I may potentially get this podcast canceled on Twitter, but I wouldn't bring him back.
I think we're safe. I think we're safe because I kind of carry the mantra of I don't care. These are my opinions. If you don't like them, you don't have to agree with them. I don't do anything out of the ordinary to beat people down, you know. But it's just, this is more divisive than like when John Cena was at the height of his popularity and he had John Cena going up against anti-John Cena fans. So it's just like, oh my God.
It's something. I mean, hey, you know what? At the end of the day, we might just get yelled at on Twitter. That's it.
Yeah, it is what it is.
And we're still going to record anyway, so who cares? But I just, for the the potential more problems he could cause, I wouldn't bring him back. It doesn't matter if he can, to some degree, sell tickets and merchandise. You can't justify, after everything he's done to almost single-handedly destroy AEW, why would you bring him back?
So let's say they do bring him back. Does he go out on TV and just apologize to everybody?
I would think he'd have to.
Do we as fans feel like we deserve an apology?
It's tough because I feel like certain fans, yes. I feel like some would just blindly be like, oh my God, no, you're, he wouldn't even say anything. And they'd be like, oh my God, it's okay. Just come back. You're fine. It's like, no, I think he should be held accountable for what he did. Mm-hmm. I mean, hell, look at the Thunder Rosa. She had to supposedly apologize to the entirety of the AEW women's locker room, obviously behind closed doors. This is like the subdued version of like Punk's thing, but you kind of have to make peace with the people in the locker room at the very least. And then, I mean, I'm sure at least mention it on TV, because this is something that you can't just be like, yeah, we're just going to pretend like this didn't happen. I'm just going to cut a promo that has nothing to do with what had happened last year. You'd have to address it somehow.
Yeah. I just, poor Colt Cabana.
That poor guy. Mind his own business.
That's the one thing I circle, because he can apologize to Kenny, and Kenny seems like a nice enough guy to let bygones be bygones. Same thing with the Bucks. They seem like good enough guys to be like, you know, let's just do our jobs and get this work done. The absolute vitriol of what he said about Colt Cabana in that press conference.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think...
unprovoked.
Like, yeah, because, like, again, this is like, he has to come back and apologize to everyone he did wrong, because he was in the wrong for what he did.
Yeah.
You know, he caused this whole big thing.
Yeah.
He was nobody else.
Nope.
Nobody else.
Whether he wants to admit it or not.
And the funny thing is, he did it after winning the world title. You would think he'd be excited to be a world champion.
Yeah, that's what you do. It's like, it was not a good look. Like, you can't justify, like, if you lost, that would have been one thing, maybe, because then you could be like, you know, tensions are running high, whatever. But the fact that you literally won the top prize in AEW, and that's how you chose to, like, start your reign, by just destroying a guy that had nothing to do with the storyline you were in, or just anything in general, not a good look. It is not a good look. It made him look like a child.
Yeah, he seems like one of those, you know, they say, you know, don't meet your heroes because you can end up disappointed.
Yeah.
He seems like one of those, like, remember we were talking about last episode, fan etiquette, keeping it brief and being respectful. I would keep it super brief with CM Punk and just be like, hey, can I get a selfie? Thank you. Bye.
The runaway. Yeah. Like, don't say anything because you don't know what's going to set him off. Yeah. Love your work, man. That's about it.
Oh, Phil Brooks, man.
Well, I'm sure whenever, if that does happen, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about during that episode. But Christ, I'm not looking forward to it. But yeah, whatever. Back to the questions, anyway. What do we think of Swerve taking over the embassy? Jack thinks it's a big upgrade over the other two guys that he had. Yeah, Parker Boudreau, and I don't remember the other guy's name.
Trench, I think his name was.
Sure. That should tell you enough. Yeah, I'd say it's a pretty good move, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely an upgrade. Brian Cage brings in, you know,
something.
Yeah, Brian Cage brings in, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Legitimacy to the mogul affiliates. I feel
a
like
little bit,
He's a household name. The other two guys from the embassy, I don't know too much. I know they wrestle in Ring of Honor and they're the six-man tag champions with Brian Cage, but I haven't seen too much of their work to be like, yeah, they're definitely good guys. But again, this is a definite upgrade from the original mogul affiliates that they were trying to do.
Yeah.
I think bringing in two guys that are relatively green as goose shit just because they're big didn't really work well.
No, you know? Not at all.
You know, and didn't really put a good focus light on Swerve. The only thing is, I'm wanting them to get this Swerve Keith Lee thing over and done with.
Yeah, it's been going on a little while.
Yeah, it's like a little bit long in the tooth. nothing really substantial. There hasn't been any matches that I went, wow, that was a barn burner right there. So I'm waiting for them to maybe do this on a pay-per-view, like Double or Nothing.
Yeah.
Which I think is the rumor that they're trying to build to.
Which I'd be okay with, because those two would tear that house down.
They would. And that's the thing. I think that they're, AEW's kind of slow footing getting to that point.
Yeah, it's like, just get there already. I mean, that itself, I'm excited about. The Mogul affiliates, I still kind of want it. Or was it the Mogul Embassy now, is I think what they call it. I do agree that it's an upgrade from Boudreaux and Trench or whatever his name is, but you got to sell me a little bit on Brian Cage, because he's kind of in the same mindset I have of Lance Archer, where it's like, okay, you're a big guy and you've lost every single possible believable match against smaller guys. So it's like, I don't think of you as a legit threat. I mean, he's big, he's powerful, I get it. But it's like, when it comes to the big matches, they just choke. Him and Archer both. So it's kind of like...
That's a hot take.
Yeah, it's like, I'm trying to get us canceled. That's literally my job today. I feel like some people would agree, though. But it's the truth, though. It's just like, every time there's like a big legitimate match where it's like, oh, well, this, I don't know, like, we'll just say like the Darby Allin. Oh, he's never going to beat somebody like Brian Cage. Like, oh my God, no. Like, he's just too good. He lost. Every match where it's just like, oh, no one can like lose to Brian. Like, oh, no one can beat Brian Cage because he's just that big and imposing, and he's lost every single time. So it's like, is he really that big of a threat anymore? I don't think so, but I would still agree that he's an upgrade over the other two, so we'll see what happens, but I'm just more excited to see what Swerve does. I really could care less about the Embassy, to be honest, because I just like Swerve. I think he's neat. I've always liked his stuff, so I'm excited to see what they're going to do with him and Keith, because I know that match is going to be really, really good whenever they do it.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Do we think there's a possibility of Rhea versus Solo, or was that just a what if moment?
Ooh, that'd be, I want to see that so bad.
I do, but you know WWE is never going to let that happen. Even Triple H.
I don't think it's going to happen anytime. I think they love teasing it, because if you see Rhea just absolutely truck Kevin Owens on Raw.
Yeah.
And that got a massive reaction all over social media. It just blew up. You know, like, if there's anybody that can get it done and make it look believable, it's Rhea Ripley.
Oh, absolutely. So if anyone's going to have an intergender match, it would be Rhea. So I'd like to see it happen. I just know that it's never going to, at least under WWE. So sadly,
it's just, what's the reasoning? You know, it's like. I mean, in wrestling, if you pay attention to independent wrestling, men versus women happen regularly all the time.
I mean, just look at, they even have teams where it's the men and the women, like Effie and Alley Catch. Like, come on, they can do it. It's a thing.
It can definitely be done. But I think Rhea versus Solo would break the internet.
Oh, that would be such a. That'd be a painful match to watch, because those two would just beat the shit out of each other in like the best way possible. But I want to see it now. I do, but I just know it's not going to happen. But maybe in an alternate universe somewhere, there's another reality where this actually does happen. But unfortunately, it's not ours. This is a good one. Are there too many historic title reigns happening currently? Individually, they're all great, but does all of them happen at once diminish the shine? It's a tough one. I feel like yes and no. I mean, yes in a way, because it'd be kind of tough to like focus on one where it's like, or it could be almost a competition of, oh, well, yeah, this one's having like a really good title reign, but oh, but there's this one that's doing so much better, even though they're both equally great, they're both equally impressive. But I think it's a good thing in a way where it's like, there's just so many good wrestlers out there right now, they're having these kind of title reigns where it's like, oh wow, this is like impressive to have so many of these historic title reigns happening at once.
I agree with everything you say, and just to add on to that, I think having these historic title reigns, we're lucky enough to have it where it's the competitors that are building up the titles, not the titles building up the competitors. You look at Gunther, for example, in the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah.
He's brought relevance back to that Intercontinental Championship that we hadn't seen since the late 80s, you know, when it was first like introduced in the 70s and 80s, you know, and now it's being seen as a legitimate title. That's why people like Xavier Woods wants to go after this title. Everybody, like we said earlier, everybody wants to go after the world title. But I think we're in an era where holding titles is important nonetheless.
Yeah.
You know, again, Gunther being Intercontinental Championship has brought that title so much legitimacy that his matches are must see.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a TV match against Xavier Woods. And I felt like that's what sold the entire show.
Yeah, I agree.
Was that match. So I feel like, and this is me personally, I've always enjoyed long title reigns, long historic title reigns, because I felt like being able to witness history is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, so being able to witness what Roman Reigns has been doing with this title and realizing the sheer people that, think about the people that he's beaten,
mm-hmm.
you know, the long list, and we've went over this already, the long list of people that he's beaten. This is a legitimate title reign. This is not just a title reign for title reign's sake.
This is like the title reign that we used to hear about and be like, oh, you just had to be there to like witness that kind of title. Well, that we are.
Exactly. I couldn't put it better myself.
It's impressive. Like I said, to just be in a period of wrestling where there are so many historic title reigns going on. It's like, oh, wow, this is like cool, because I think it's also even a positive too, because when are we going to get all these historic title reigns like this again, all mm-hmm. at the same time? Like, I think we're pretty lucky right now as wrestling fans to be getting all of these, because we're used to maybe getting like, oh, I don't know, maybe one or two at a time, if that, and to have all of them happening at once, it's like, wow, this is unheard of pretty much for like most wrestling fans, because they're just not used to this type of excellence. And I'm happy to be witnessing it as it's happening, so I can't complain.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I love it more than them playing hot potato with the titles.
Yeah, I know that's not your favorite thing in the world.
Hate it. That's why, could you imagine my face when Wardlow won?
Yeah, you're probably like, oh god, here we go again.
Yeah, I have nothing against Wardlow, but why take the title off of him in the first place?
Hey, but now we're gonna get him and Luchasaurus. Aren't you excited about that? Yeah, that's what I kind of thought too. I'm just like, why?
Yeah, Luchasaurus.
I mean, if they can build him up as an actual threat, then be my guest, but sure. I can't with that one. And finally, or Jack's final question is, did Brock and Trish go to the same tailor? I think they might have. It was pretty similar. That's a good one. It was pretty.
I definitely got the old Trish Stratus vibes when she came out with that outfit. Definitely brought it back old school. I don't know what the hell Brock was thinking. He just came out there. And the funny thing was, I kind of saw it happening before it happened. What if they brought Brock just to stand at the ramp, do nothing, and then leave? And that's exactly what he did. And he did it in the most obscene duster coat.
Trench coat.
And cowboy hat. He looked like Chuck Norris, like in Walker, Texas Ranger. It was ridiculous.
Like, he looked like a cowboy vampire hunter, that's what he looked like.
Cowboy vamp, that's so good.
It's like, that's literally what it looked like. It was just like, what are you wearing? Like,
it's so good. Oh man,
it's sad because it was two completely different reactions. Like you said, like Trish, you could see it. It's like, yeah, that was like vintage Trish. That like makes perfect sense. And then Brock, it's like, what are you doing, man? Like, who said that was a good idea?
That trench coat is not built for a fight.
No, and it's not built for somebody like him either. Like, I mean, hey, if you think you look good in it, be my guest, but no.
Oh, man. No.
Oh, God. All right, so that was all of Jack's questions. So, Jack, thank you. And finally, we come to Matthew, who had a very good question for us that we've literally been talking about for days because we've been trying to figure out how to answer it. So, he would like us to essentially fantasy book, a buried alive match and storyline with Undertaker from 2004, so like prime Undertaker, against a couple of AEW wrestlers. And then it's some very interesting choices on here. So we're just going to go one by one just so we can not get all jumbled up. So how would we book this kind of thing with Undertaker versus Chris Jericho in this version of him?
That's the thing. I couldn't find very many Jericho versus Taker matches that were out there. So I felt like this would be very good. Like, I don't want to say nostalgia match. But again, we're talking about Undertaker in his prime, Chris Jericho.
Now,
you know, we all know how I feel about Chris Jericho, but the man can still wrestle, get it done. So I think this would be a very formidable match. I would still give the edge over to Undertaker. Again, it's a buried alive match, and it's 2004. 2004 was when he returned as the Dead Man after being the American Badass. So I felt like he was on another level at that time. So I would give the win to Taker on that one. But I felt like Jericho would do a very good job of building that up.
I feel like Jericho, especially like this version of Jericho now, would probably just do something about respect, because that seems to be his thing right now, is if he feels disrespected, he's gonna have a problem with you. So I feel like he could have easily made like a some type of excuse of how he felt disrespected by Undertaker, like, I don't know, probably coming back at that point. So that's how I feel like it would be based on his respect.
I like it.
All right, so now this one is completely different. Darby Allin.
This one would be cool. I think I would this like one this would be one. Cool. Yeah. This would be one of those sort of just, you don't really have to have a storyline other than this is kind of like a passing of the torch.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Darby, obviously he fits well with Sting, so he would fit well with The Undertaker because it's two in the same pod, basically.
And Darby likes coffins.
Yeah, and Darby likes coffins. Now, who would get the win in a buried alive match?
Oh, God. I feel like as good as Undertaker is, I think Darby just does not give a shit about his well-being, that he would just do whatever he had to possibly do to, like, win.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, that's basically Darby's MOM, and especially when you put him up against The Undertaker. I feel like The Undertaker at that time would probably be flinging Darby around. And just like you wouldn't care. I would expect a coffin drop into the grave.
Off the stage. Know?
Yeah, that'd be so sick.
Because, I mean, let's be real. Back in the day, they had some wild set designs. So you mean to tell me that Darby Allin probably wouldn't have tried to scale that thing and dive off of it onto him? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
What a nut job.
We love him, but there's like, please, can you like not shorten your life expectancy, please?
Yeah. He's on that trajectory for sure.
He would. This one would, I think, implode wrestling from the inside out. Kenny Omega.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Kenny Omega versus The Undertaker.
That would easily just be like, who's the best in the world at that point?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Kenny now and Undertaker back then, like, that one's easy.
Yeah, a lot of these matches, you don't really even need storylines. You're just like, put it on paper and it's like, boom, let's just make it happen. Yeah. This would be one of those, I feel like, Kenny Omega New Japan matches where it's just kind of like a marathon of just hard-hitting strikes, you know?
45 minutes.
Yeah, I think it would be like that 45-minute sort of marathon to get the people out of their seats.
Who would win that, though?
Yeah. Kenny Omega. See, that's the thing. Kenny Omega, he hits that one winged angel and he wins because nobody kicks out of the one winged angel.
That's fair. So. Well, no one ever really, man. I mean, yeah, some people did kick out of the tombstone, I guess. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They kicked out of the tombstone, but that was another move that was kind of like protected in its day. You got hit with the tombstone. It was over unless you were like Shawn Michaels or something.
Yeah, so it'd be like, who would be the first one to kick out of the other's move? Like, that would be the big thing.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good way to put it. Because imagine Kenny Omega trying to hoist up The Undertaker for a one-winged angel.
Oh, God, that would be... That'd be something.
In itself. Yeah, that'd be cool to see.
That would be... I mean, he'd have to hit him with a couple of E-triggers, I would think. But then again, picking up all that dead weight under your shoulders? No, thank you.
Yeah.
That'd be wild. I can't pick who would win that one.
That'd be fun to watch, man. These matches would be fun to watch.
Oh, they would be so much fun to watch. All right. Hangman Adam Page.
Oh, this, you want to talk about a match about respect?
Yeah.
That would be the one where Hangman is kind of feeling like he's not getting the respect, and the only way to do it is to bury the dead man.
Yeah.
You know?
And so Undertaker would be like, I'm just trying to mind my own business and you called me out, so now I have to kick your ass.
Yeah, basically. Again, another phenomenal match. If you look at it, it's just like, it's a perfect counterpart to the other. I would give the win to the Undertaker. I think this would be one of the ones where, like, you lose, but you don't lose really. It's like a victory within a loss. You know?
Yeah, I'd say so.
You know, if Hangman gives it all he's got, he just can't put down the Undertaker, can't bury him alive. You know, it's, but he gave it all he got, hit him with a couple buckshot lariats and, you know, things like that. It'd be a phenomenal match for sure. It's definitely sell some tickets there.
Oh, I would pay to see that one for sure. That would be a fun one. Speaking of pain, I think you and I would absolutely pay. We would dump our entire bank accounts out to see Undertaker versus Malakai Black.
Oh,
you don't tempt us with a good time. This is not fair. Oh boy, I feel like especially 04 Undertaker was still into the supernatural macabre kind of stuff. So I mean, I think the storyline write itself at that point. Like, come on. Mm-hmm. I would want to see this match so bad. And you know what? I think I would give the win to Malakai. I think he could do it.
Yeah, I could
barely
see it.
But
I could see it.
Missed.
This would it would just be a lot of spooky stuff.
Oh yeah, and I would love every second of it.
A lot of spooky stuff.
Oh, all the spooky stuff. That would God, the promos and the storyline material these two would have would just be, oh my God, off the charts. I would definitely give Malakai the win on that one.
Bias, I would give him the win. I don't know. I would give him the win based on merit.
Yeah, I think if he, it would be kind of like a Darby Allin thing. I think that'd be another like passing of the torch. Yeah, I could definitely see Malakai taking the win on that one. Oh God, I wish that was a thing. Why can't that be a thing? Well, then I guess we'll just have to buy 2K23 and make Malakai and just like have our fantasy booking on like Twitch or something. That's what we'll have to do one of these days.
Yeah, definitely.
Is it cross-platform, by the way?
I believe so. I'm not too sure.
Well, if it is, then I may have to buy it at some point. I may have to do something for Twitch.
Yeah, we got to get some Twitch content out there.
Yeah, because I haven't played a game and I was like SmackDown versus Raw. Those are like my games. So I might have to get you. I mean, my friends and I in college played like 2K, like, Jesus, 16, I think, 17. It's been a while, but I would buy it again if it's on sale. We'll see what happens. So stay tuned on Eric's Twitch for that one. We might have to do something. Yeah. But yeah, I would definitely give the win to Malakai, and I would pay a large sum of money to see that match happen. And finally, Undertaker versus MJF.
This one would be a lot of fun because it'd just be, it would remind me a lot of that feud he had with Randy Orton.
Yeah, when literally.
Orton was coming up, you know? He was kind of the cocky, brash kind of asshole, but MJF would take it even a step further. You know?
He won.
It would just be classic MJF trying to get under the skin of The Undertaker.
Yeah.
And at that time, you really couldn't get under the skin of The Undertaker. He was
you just had to try and kill him, apparently.
Yeah, you know, he was basically unshakable, you know? So it'd be fun to see MJF take shots at The Undertaker, try to get the one up. I think based off what we see from MJF now, he would definitely cheat to pick up the win. Probably get a bunch of people to help him bury The Undertaker, kind of the same way Mankind did it back in the day. You know, you got a whole bunch of people from the back to help him. And the funny story is they didn't even plan that out. They didn't realize how long it would take to actually bury somebody.
Oh, my God.
So that's why they had a bunch of people run out there with shovels. And kind of, I learned that on the the Rivals show on A&E that they I learned that they basically didn't take into account how much time it would take to actually bury somebody.
Yeah.
So that's why they had a bunch of people go out there, like Triple H and Doink and all those guys go out there with shovels and bury the Undertaker to kind of speed it up. But I feel like he would definitely do what he's doing with Sammy Guevara now and try to like pay somebody to take out the Undertaker.
Yeah.
We could definitely see like another five labors of MJF where he picks like five people to go up against the Undertaker, you know, to kind of take him out before the big match.
I feel like it would be kind of like the whole thing, like you said, the whole thing with Orton again, where, yeah, he would get the one up on like the initial match, but I feel like in the end, Undertaker would end up winning the feud. It would just be like that initial one. I think he would end up winning too. I agree.
Man, that would be, imagine if we had an MJF back in 2004.
Oh God, he would have been insufferable. They would have hated him more than they do now, but still. Oh, that'd be insane. I do think that's it. I think we did it all.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a really good one. Thank you, Matthew. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I believe those are all the questions, right?
Yes, that is all of them.
Wow. What an episode. We went through all those questions and we got a firsthand account of what Dynamite and Rampage was like in Pittsburgh or Britsburg.
Yeah, we always got to say Britsburg.
We got to get that right. Got to say Britsburg.
Yes.
Britsburg. But so, great episode. So, let you know where you can listen to this episode if you're already listening to it now. But it'd be nice of you to go ahead and subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts. Check us out. Hit that subscribe button. We're all across the board on the internet wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it be Stitcher, Spotify, Google, Apple. Again, wherever you listen to podcasts, we got you covered. If you can't find it, all you got to do is hit us up on social media and we will deliver a link to you on a silver platter that we must get back.
Yeah, we need to get it back.
Yeah, those things are expensive.
Yeah, it's one of one. We can't keep making more.
So if you need help finding the episode, don't worry. Hit us up on social media. And where is that specifically? Well, that's on Twitter and Instagram at Ringside Rundown. Same handle for both accounts, at Ringside Rundown. We don't have a blue check mark or anything like that.
We're not
going to pay for Twitter blue, but we'll be available whenever you need us on Twitter or Instagram at Ringside Rundown. Shay, where can they get in touch with you on Twitter?
Can find me on Twitter at ShayleneHixon21. Also, no blue check mark. We don't need that. occasionally Twitch at Shay_Hixon21. It's been a little while, but I'm trying to find a day to just go on there just for a quick like stream just to get it back up and going again. So we'll see if that ever happens soon. Depends on my schedule. But you also have a Twitch as well.
Yes, I do. You could check me out on Twitch sporadically. I kind of take breaks as well, you know, in between. But you can check me out on Twitch, twitch.tv/EricTheGhost. You can also follow me on Twitter if you would like to talk wrestling or anything of the like. If you want to interact with me on Twitter, you can follow me at WrestlingChron. That's Wrestling CHRON. So find me there on those two places, and we could talk some wrestling.
Yeah, and if, like I said, if I can get 2K23 at a decent price on PSN and it's cross-platform, we might have to do something for Twitch. You never know.
Yeah, we definitely have to make some content out for the people, add some bonus Ringside Rundown content. How about that?
Yeah, and see how we act when it's not professional recording time, how stupid we can act in like public on the public Twitch. But it would be a wild time, I would think. I'd be excited if we can get that to work.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. We definitely have to do something. But that is the end of this episode. We will be back probably next week, probably another weekend episode. I don't know. We'll figure that out post-production when our next episode is. But like I said, pay attention to the Twitter, because usually what we do is before we record an episode, we put out a tweet asking you guys to send in some questions. Now, the questions part is like the beef of the episode. This is all about what the episode is answering your questions. So follow us on Twitter. Ask us questions when we send out the tweet for questions. And you can listen to us debate your question on the podcast. So that's a lot of fun there. And I've run out of things to say. So for Shay Hixon, my name is Eric Vasquez. And we will see you next time here on the Ringside Rundown Podcast.
See you later, guys.